you when you were speaking of the energy concentrating and forming a personality and then the space around.
Not quite space, right.
Not quite space. I was wondering if that had any relation to auras.
The aura has got a much simpler relationship. I don't know if you remember, the other day probably in the Hatha Yoga session, we discussed that the field of prana is arbitrarily about 12 inches outside the body. That itself could be the aura. The magnetic field around every person, the pranic shield or field around every person.
Then is it stronger just around the head, the prana?
Well, it depends upon, it's a class. It depends upon which part of you is strong, I guess. If you are very strong, headstronger, they are probably the... I don't think they have any specific doctrine concerning this.
Are these auras, and are they visible to the eye? Some people say like they can see your chakras and they can see the aura. I've heard quite a few people say that.
Yeah, good. So it's obviously visible to them. Or they think it is visible to them. You see, again, there's a lovely shloka in another scripture called Devi Mahatmya, Durga Saptashati. Divandha pranina kechit ratravanda tadapri kechit diva tataratru pranina stulidrishtaya. It is, some beings see at night, some beings see in daytime, some are endowed with the faculty of seeing both in day and night. So it's possible some beings are endowed with the faculty of seeing something else. Auras. Some people have what is known as clairvoyance. Clairvoyance in French merely means I can see clearly. Right? That there's no eye defect. Or there's no mistiness in front of my eyes, clear vision. But they interpret it as something different. Clairvoyance means they should be able to read your thoughts. But what for? I don't want to read your thoughts. Imagine my reading this girl's thoughts. I'll go crazy in half an hour. So, and then if people are interested in these things, they are welcome, right? There are techniques which you can open up all these faculties in you and so on. But they usually lead to the very opposite of what we were discussing this morning. The result usually is the very opposite of what we were discussing this morning. In understanding the law of karma clearly, I have nothing but goodwill for you, whoever you are. Even if you have, if you come to me making an appointment and saying, I hate you, I want to kill you. I want to murder you. I'm coming to see you this afternoon. Even then I have nothing but goodwill for you. Knowing that if it is not necessary to balance something, to rectify the imbalance, correct the imbalance, it wouldn't happen. Right? That is the trend of karma. But here, that whole thing is demolished. I look at you and he seems to have a blue aura. I look at you, you seem to have a red aura. That means you are aggressive, you are so-and-so is nice and so-and-so is vicious.
It just feeds the self-arrogating.
Exactly.
Ego sense.
Exactly. And makes it worse. I mean, makes you be afraid of people. Makes you hate people. Makes you dislike people. Categorize people. He's a good man. He's a bad man. And usually, when you meet some of these people, as I have done, they do not recognize good people at all. Probably there are not too many good people in the world. They see all kinds of spooks around everybody. Why must they get into that mess? But it is possible.
Where does choice come in?
What is choice?
Well, it seems that there must,
you know, don't
to my understanding, some kind of an interplay between this cause and effect, or like, say, karma would seem to me could, the idea of it in a sense could be used as sort of, to a sort of fatalistic approach towards life.
Yes.
And then
no.
You also have the power of choice there.
Yeah, I don't like that word fatalism, but still, let's face it. Life is fatalistic. If by fatal one understands the word correctly, a fatal blow means a blow which led to death. A fatal illness means an illness which resulted in death. If you take that meaning of the word, life is fatal.
Mm-hmm.
So what is more fatal than that? I mean, what is choice here?
Well, in a sense, I mean, you have chosen to become a Swami, and chosen in a sense to do what you're doing. Or would you feel that was just your destined path, or what would you say is the interplay?
That's it. Thus, the effect of past action, which comes back as a consequence or fruit or reward or retribution or whatever it is, does it come in the form of an experience or an expression? It comes in as an experience, no? It comes back to me as an experience.
You mean by that, like...
There it is finished. It doesn't compel me to act in a certain manner now. I call you a fool or something. Huh? And let's take a very commonplace action-reaction, not this involved metaphysical stuff. I call you a fool and you get up and give me a smashing blow. That's it. My action of insulting you brought me the experience of receiving that blow. There the account is settled. It does not compel me to act afresh. It is the samskara that makes me act afresh. Right? When I insulted you, that aggressive nature or violence or whatever it is was in me. It was that poured that insult. And when that received the blow, it doesn't stop there, it continues the action, keeps it going. It's not the experience that determines my reaction. It is the samskara that determines the reaction. It's the habit that...
samskara is like habit.
Samskara is habit.
Reaction.
Mm. So that's a different thing altogether. The compulsion is not from outside, it's from inside. The compulsion to act, and therefore the responsibility of the for the action is me, not outside.
How about will and free will? Is there such a thing as free will?
Let's say it, there is.
Relative?
No, no. Relative free will is not free will. It's not free. What is free will? Where does it come from?
Well, I guess I would call it individual will.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
And where does it spring from? Where does it spring from?
Individuality.
From me. And the me is loaded with all these samskaras. And so we are partly conditioned. And there is the point at which the individual touches the cosmic consciousness, where there is cosmic consciousness and not even an individual, jiva. There you are free. All the rest is conditioned. There, at one point, you are free. Between the two is this silly thing called me, which nobody knows.
So you'd say that all will then is, or will on a personality level is coming from the...
From the me.
From the me.
Yeah.
How about... like, maybe this is a little too far ahead, but if there is, like, the jiva, which is the individual, how does that individuality...
No, the jiva is really not the individual. The
individual soul.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cell.
Cell.
Mm-hmm.
In this cosmic being.
Mm-hmm.
How is that... individuality expressed, or in other words, how?
Perhaps it doesn't need any expression, sir. It is cosmic. Why does it want to express itself? What for? It is.
Well, why is man endowed with will then, if there isn't any will?
A man assumes that he is endowed with a will. Poor thing. Then very soon discovers it's not so. You know what you and I would do if only we were endowed with all that free will? Oh, Papa. It doesn't take more than 10 minutes to discover it's not so. Within this circumscribed me principle, there seems to be a free will either to have the attention riveted, fixed on the me or on the on consciousness, on questioning it constantly. That free will seems to be possible. In other words, the free will either to continue to be ignorant or foolish, or to turn towards the light. That seems to exist. But the rest of it, we are not free at all. We are not free to choose what we shall have, because that is the reaction that is coming, piled up. Who was it that said this morning that... you said the hens inside, you see a string of eggs already loaded up. You also said, yeah, that's it. So all that is been counted and piled up. So it comes one after the other. So as far as the experience are concerned, you are not free to choose. in regard to the action or further reaction, you have a choice, yes. And that choice you can make sensibly and wisely only if you exercise the fundamental choice of either facing darkness or facing light. That's the only free will we have.
Do you really think we have that choice?
Yes, yes.
How can there be some free will and all the rest determined? I mean, how can there be a mixture?
We are a mixture, sir. That is, the experiences are predetermined. What I am going to have is predetermined, right? Let's put it rather in a very simple way. In another 5 hours' time, it's going to get dark. That is predetermined. Nothing is going to stop it. 8, half past 8, it's going to get dark. What you are going to do when it becomes dark is not determined. You can sit and meditate. You can switch on all the lights and play poker. That's up to you.
But what makes you choose one or the other?
That is
predetermined.
So that's not exactly predetermined. The whole thing is piled up. The samskaras or the habits, the patterns and the predispositions are all piled up. Whether you want... Right. All these samskaras are piled up. All the habits are piled up. But that intelligence in you, not the me, the thing that is before buddhi, where is it facing? The samskaras piled up is the me. And aside from this, there is the consciousness which is there constantly. Cosmic consciousness, cosmic being. The intelligence, buddhi, is it looking at the samskara load and being and reflect, does it reflect the samskaras or does it reflect the cosmic consciousness?
I don't think it can choose which one is reflecting.
But it can turn. Can really turn.
But I think it gets, I don't know, I just feel this, that it gets bounced from one to the other.
Quite right, right.
It cannot choose.
Like, it can. That is, by definition. By definition, it is a discriminating intelligence. So, we have just that little bit of... am I facing the light or am I facing the darkness?
You can feel that in you as you change. Mm-hmm. In the face of something, you look there or you look there.
Yeah. That's the only freedom of choice we have.
Isn't it limited though? Like, okay, I say, I choose consciously now, I want to face the light, but because of my karma...
Because of your samskara. There is a definite, distinct and definite pull towards the heap of habits, definitely. Right.
So then I don't have a choice.
You have
a choice to bring.
In a manner of speaking. Now let's take the another example. As you sow, so you reap.
Yeah.
I question that. I may not want to reap. I've also got a garden in Mauritius. I go keep on sowing. I don't reap anything. I come away. I work with the garden. I see them grow. It's beautiful, lovely.
Yeah, but you
and when it is time, same thing. Same thing. If I stay here for a few more months, I can work in the garden. I can see that it is planted nicely and plant the seed and so on. But I may not want to reap it. Yeah. What for?
But you sowed the garden in Mauritius and you reaped it in the Yashodhara Ashram.
That's far-fetched. That's a bit far-fetched. Now, so the only thing that one can say is that as you sow, so shall it grow.
Yeah.
It's more poetic. As you sow, so shall it grow. But the other, his argument is that since you had a motivation in sowing, that motivation will compel you and drive you to reap. Which is true to a very great degree. And that is why to deliberately turn away from that towards the light is not such a child's play. One has to make a distinct and definite effort, if one may call it so, to turn from that to this. Once you turn here towards the light, then the light is reflected in you, in the buddhi, and the whole thing works beautifully. But if I keep on looking at the other one, then that continues the vicious the circle. And therefore again, that even a scripture like Yoga Vasishtha, where throughout every line of every paragraph and every page, all these philosophical systems are blown to pieces. This one question is always avoided. There you must have satsang. You must deliberately choose the right company and right action, right this thing. Then it is possible. The rest is predetermined. You don't care. You let the effect of past actions flow through. What have I got to do with it? But the habit pattern has no is not given the opportunity to repeat itself.
In the Yoga Vasishtha readings that we've had for the last 2 days, there was this man who'd been indulging in sense pleasure for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And he'd become so utterly disillusioned that he just said, please. Huh? Now, is that a choice?
Right. That is a choice.
But he can't choose that.
For those 10,000 years, he obviously had the choice but did not make it because of the force of the other power. You know this fun, just to relax. Somebody didn't like, wanted to break a habit. You didn't like the habit at all. So you started wiping it. What do you mean? A bit was still there. The bit is still there. It is still there. Half of it is still there. How much is half of it? It is two letters, half of it is T. So, after wiping nearly the whole thing, you turned around and half of it is still there. It's not easy to... And therefore, it is there that we seem to need, however much one may talk of independence and non-dependence upon external aids and props and so on. It is there that we need some external aid. We may call it God, you may call it Guru, you may call it Satsang, you may call it books, gooks, anything you want.
Would you repeat what you were saying about once you make the turn to the light is reflected in the buddhi?
In the buddhi, yes.
And then it's all easy?
Then the light takes care of you. That light takes care of you. It is not, when I say easy, I mean, it's relative again. It's not impossible for such a person to slip. But then, after all, how did I come to be a chain smoker? I wasn't chain smoking when I was born. It was cultivated. This smoking habit has been cultivated. Even so, the satsang habit can be cultivated. The meditation habit can be cultivated. So if in the right atmosphere, the right environment and the right company, with the right guidance, I cultivate this meditation that is turned towards the light, it is possible that the other pull is severe at some stage or the other. That I may even fall back into the old groove. But just as while I was facing the light, the other one was nagging, when I am there, this one is nagging me to come back. It's quite simple. It's simple. If the mind functions only in terms of habits, a good habit must also be a bothersome thing when you want to enjoy yourself. Let yourself go. And that was the thing about Shaktipatha also, this Muktananda's thing. He does it in a very powerful way, I guess. But there is this theory that in the very proximity of an enlightened person, something of it rubs off on you. That is what is called Shaktipatha. And a holy man called Kabir, he came up with a rather shocking revelation. He says, why do you think that satsanga, the company with the holy man, is so futile, and that unless something is done, like questions, answers, or talking, things like that, you are wasting your time. In the mere presence of a holy man, something is awakened in you. He gives an example. You go near a man suffering from tuberculosis. He may not talk to you, he may not give you any blessings, and he may not give you any instructions over the years on how to get tuberculosis. But you catch the germ, yes? He may merely sneeze or cough, and there you are, you had it. If a silly little germ, TB germ, could have such power, why not the spiritual virus? It could be equally powerful. So you stay there, you stand there and look at that holy man, and you are infected. to a small extent, big extent, depending upon your resistance. That's where satsanga or some kind of environmental, not only mental, but environmental help seems to be indicated. That's what I asked Krishnamurti also once. When you sit with him and talk to him, you definitely feel something different. In half an hour, you feel completely different. You go back home and you discover that you are the same fool. That's it. But still, something has been, some seed has been sown, so that it doesn't completely get destroyed, and it does not let you be destroyed completely. Otherwise, there is no sense in coming here. And one habit is as strong as the other habit. As you sow, so shall it grow.
Water it. If you water it.
If you water it, yes, naturally. And there, that is the way, that's the magic formula of the enlightened yogi remaining unaffected by prarabdha. I've been saying that we have no choice but to allow the prarabdha to work itself out. But since there has been a tremendous revolutionary transmutation within me in the meantime, between the sowing and the growing, I look at this, yes, I'm not interested in it anymore. So the experience passed.